This show is brought to you by patreon.com/Steve Charney, where for as little as a dollar a month or more, you can support this podcast. And there are special downloads for patrons as well, like great comedy recordings and me and Harry's CDs. Welcome to Conversations with My Dummy. I'm Steve Charney, and today I have three guests. First one is Hester Mundis. Joan Rivers said she was one of the funniest women writing today, and Joan would have known, right? Hester has written, co-written, and ghost-written articles, plays, screenplays, TV shows, 27 books, both fiction and nonfiction, under numerous pseudonyms for numerous reasons, for numerous celebrities, on subjects ranging from marriage, motherhood, and divorce, to the joys of franchising brothels, the virtues of vitamins, and 101 ways to avoid reincarnation, to name just a few. And she was also the head writer on the Joan Rivers Show for years and warmed up the audience every day with a stand-up routine. In fact, she looks and sounds just like Joan Rivers. It's uncanny. The interview I did with her was done before Joan Rivers died, so it's a little dated, but it still holds up, especially the one-liners about her younger husband, like 19 years younger, and who she's still married to after several decades. You can find a lot more info about her at hestermundis.com. That's M-U-N-D-I-S. And later in the program, you'll hear me and Harry sing with Jay Unger and Molly Mason, with Jay doing amazing fiddle work as usual.
Oh, here's Harry. Good, because we got things to do. So, Harry, how you doing, man?
Sorry, Steve. Can't be part of the show today.
What do you mean you can't be part of the show? Come on, we have a script and everything to do. It's right here.
Sorry, I just have too big a caseload today. I have a lot of work to do sorting through their files and everything.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you know I've opened up a practice, Steve? I'm counseling vegetables.
Huh?
Vegetables, man, vegetables! What, you don't think a tomato can have psychological problems, too? Only humans are sensitive enough to get depressed? Well, you're wrong, fella. Vegetables need help, too, you know.
But vegetables don't have a mind. They don't even have a face.
That's often their problem. For instance, I've been working with an artichoke that has a very strong inferiority complex. And why? Because he has no face! It's terrible! I have to keep instilling in him the notion that he's unique and special.
Is it getting better?
Of course not! He's just an artichoke, for Pete's sake.
Oh.
But I keep trying. Where there's life, there's hope. Plus, the money is pretty good.
Who else are you counseling?
I got a cauliflower with a tremendous identity crisis.
Why is that?
Well, on one hand, she's supposed to be a flower, right? She's called a cauliflower. Did you ever see a cauliflower? Looks like someone's brain. It's disgusting. What kind of flower is that?
It's a pretty ugly flower.
Hence the identity crisis. It keeps trying to act like a daisy, you know, delicate and petite. Did you ever see a hippo at a tea party? That's the cauliflower. So I'm working with her to get her to see her inner beauty.
Does she have inner beauty?
Of course not. She's just a dumb vegetable.
You know, I don't know if you're a very good therapist.
I'm the best, Steve. Who else would take on these vegetables? Most of the time they just sit there like, well, like vegetables. It's hard to get them to say anything. I've got this piece of celery with a tremendous case of agoraphobia.
What's that?
Fear of the marketplace. Now, we all know a celery's ultimate destiny, right? It goes to the market, gets sold in a bunch, then it's brought home. Someone munches it down in a tuna salad, or maybe with a little cream cheese and salt. This stalker celery has to learn to accept its fate, but it doesn't. It's petrified of the unknown, of being brought to someone's house who's mean and nasty. It has terrible dreams of being left out on the counter until it's limp and proud. I keep telling it, worry is useless. Be the best celery you can be right at this moment. It's hard work, Steve, but I think I'm getting through to it.
So your work is the good work?
Of course it is.
Do you have vegetables that exhibit, let's say, violent behavior?
Yes! I have a tomato that goes to plays and throws himself at the actors. You know, it wouldn't be so bad if it was at bad actors. But he'll throw himself at anyone. For instance, Al Pacino.
Get out of here. Al Pacino?
That's right. That's how sick this tomato is. There was Al doing Shakespeare in Central Park last year. One of the great performances of all time. And who comes up and throws himself on Pacino's King Lear costume? My tomato, that's who! He had reached bottom. It was lucky he wasn't lynched by the audience. Now, if he had thrown himself at Chuck Norris, this I could have understood. But Al Pacino, come on.
Let's take a break.
Fine, maybe I'll have some time to go over these case files. I got a lot of work to do, and I don't have time to talk to you.
And Hester Mundis has joined me in the studio.
Well, hi there, Steve. I'm back.
You're back and better
Chuckie
than ever.
I came back.
Chuckley's back.
We just now go, Hester's back.
Whee!
People usually know it. Because usually I walk around and the sound of Hester is this. It's Tic Tacs.
It's a sign of the times because it used to be good and plenty.
Right. Yeah, but when you get a little heavy, you know, less is more. Haven't you noticed that less is definitely more? Everything is light. In fact, we are paying more when they go less fat, less cream, less this. And you pay more money.
Yeah.
So it finally is true that less is more.
Like then there's a whole thing about how they're also making everything light and how it's very deceptive. For instance, there was one product that said something light. It was a lighter color.
You're allowed to say that. They're not lying. This darn. Yeah, I could have pulled that years ago.
Yeah,
I could be making a lot more money than I am now at the Joan Rivers show.
Right, which brings up Joan Rivers here. Hester has not only an author of many books.
And with Joan, we've written two screenplays together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, they sit on a shelf. Girl Meets Boy was a really exciting title over there.
Now, besides writing for the show, you also warm up the audience before the Joan Rivers show.
And I will tell you, it is not easy. Early in the morning, what I do, aside from telling them how to applaud and everything, I get out there and I want them to like me because I figure that way they're, not likely to be hostile if they like you. And you establish a personal rapport. So I do a little bit of stand-up. I tell them a little about my life and being married to a much younger man. You know I am married to a much younger man.
I know you are.
And then I make them say to me, how young is he? And I say, he is so young, we have training wheels on our car, okay? Yes, he's a much younger husband. When we got married, Big Bird was our best man. The man wants a condo in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. That's how young he is. He thinks of an after-theater snack as his 10 o'clock feeding. The only reason he holds my hand is because he's afraid to cross the street by himself. So I tell them these things about my much younger husband. And
that'll wake any audience up.
Oh, it did. And they think I'm making it up, but you happen to know that
I know your
true.
Husband.
Did you see the man in the short pants? That's my husband. Someone says, your husband is, and look for the kid with the lollipop. And sometimes my husband does those things to me. He comes, he'll show up and pick me up at work, and he'll be having a lollipop in his pocket. And he looks really young. He makes himself look really... He can do things like that.
What's the age difference between you and him?
Oh, well, he's only 3 years older than my son. 19 years... Almost 19 years.
19 years difference.
And yeah, now 19 years old.
Because since you're only 30, that's...
I know!
Really, it's true.
People try to figure this out. They say, how come your son has a job? How could he possibly be? And they look around on the floor for my husband. I tell everyone our wedding picture, I'm in a wedding gown, he's on a pony. You know, it's just a great wedding shot. You have to do this. And so I get them... now that I've got them going with that, then I sort of roll into... I tell them a little more about my life. And I tell them about the guests. I mean, the guests who are going to be on the show, but usually about, the guests that aren't there. You see?
The guests aren't there.
The guests aren't there. These are not invisible spirits or anything. You see, Joan will say, the audience has to get excited about guests who aren't there. You see, some people, some celebrities can only make it on certain days, so we tape them at an earlier date, and then we roll them into the show because it works that way.
Sort of the way this interview goes, right? Everyone thinks that it's part of the show, but it really isn't. We did this weeks before on the other side of the country.
I could have a new husband by now. It's been that long.
You may be an old man.
Sometimes these things happen. Like a guest will say something, and maybe we had recorded this piece 2 weeks early, and we really wanted it for the show for some special reason. And something he says doesn't really jive. Right. But then Joan has to match her jewelry. Her hair, her makeup. Do you know how many of us could? I mean, we have to look at the tape. Her dresser is wonderful. And there's always one smart aleck viewer who will write in, the flowers, how come the flowers are pink and they were blue in the other? And they write in, they call it, they're outraged. Or, she had pearl earrings on, not these drop earrings. Why do people. Joan had on, different earrings. There are people that make it. I noticed that. But the audience, meanwhile, here's my job. I give them that really, get them really excited. Okay, let's just say, whoa, we have Tom Cruise on, and then screaming, carrying on, crazy, but he's not really going to be here.
Then
we find out he wasn't even here. The first time he was here, we had him on a satellite, which is even worse. It's sort of like watching a phone conference. It's like watching television. A whole bunch of people are in an audience watching one large television screen, and a satellite is the most embarrassing interview to do because here's this whole audience trying to applaud, but you're watching television. It really feels silly. And also, we're such a cheap show. We do things frugal. Okay, let's call it frugal. That's a nice word, frugal. A satellite, when you see somebody talking to somebody on television far away, we won't pay for them to get a television to see us. So they basically are looking at a camera and have no idea. And they say things like, you look marvelous, Joan. And they don't even know what she's doing. She's making faces and everything. She does cut up. So it's kind of fun.
Well, thanks a lot, Hester, for being a guest on the show.
Well, thank you, Steve. I had a lot more to say, but then again, I always
you
do.
You always do. But it really is fascinating to hear about the behind the scenes of a show that you see on television.
I still find it fascinating. I still don't believe these things ever get made.
It's amazing what you do. This show itself, people would be amazed at how much splicing and editing and time it takes. It seems like a nice, smooth show. Forget it.
They don't realize that this one sentence is I've been here 16 times to get
We've said concept. Goodbye four times. We keep cutting. It's not a live show. This is a tape show.
It was wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Hester.
You're welcome.
Harry is now a therapist. He counsels vegetables with disorders.
Right, Steve. During that last recorder, I've been going over the file here of this zucchini with an eating disorder.
Ooh, I didn't know that zucchinis eat.
They don't. They get eaten. And no one wants to eat this one. It's sad, Steve. Very sad. In the beginning, I thought, I'll just try harder. It would nuzzle up to some chef in a fancy kitchen and, you know, sort of cuddle up to the blade. But the chef would just shunt it aside. It would roll up to some housewife who was making dinner for her family and pretend to dive into a hot pan with olive oil in it. But no luck! People weren't buying it. Well, soon it began to think it wasn't them. It was him. For some reason, no one wanted to eat it. And it began to feel bad, real bad. It would sit around listless and depressed.
Well, what did you do to make it feel better?
I ate it. Could do.
Who else are you counseling?
Oh, I've been working with a pickle with a terrible guilt complex.
Why?
Because it has a yellow tinge to its skin. Passes as a banana, Steve. Pickles and bananas tend to have the same shape, so there's this pickle going to a fancy dress banana balls, hanging around in the banana bowl, feeling guilty of sin because deep down it knows it's a simple pickle and should be in a pickle jar fermenting with the rest of his downtrodden kin.
And he feels guilty.
Yes! He should be working to help his fellow pickles instead of gallivanting around like a social butterfly. You see, in the vegetable world, a fruit has panache, social grace, and sweetness.
Wow, he's in a real pickle.
At least he's firm. I have a cucumber who sees me once a week who's limp.
Limp?
Limp! Barely has the energy to come to my office. You know how a cuke should be springy and buoyant? Well, this cucumber is limp.
What do you do to help it?
Physical therapy.
Which entails?
Slapping it around a bit and shouting, "Stop being limp! Stop being limp!"
Does it help?
No, but it's fun to do.
Aren't you going to make the cucumber even more upset?
When are you going to understand these are just vegetables, for Pete's sake?
You don't seem like a very understanding therapist.
Listen, I didn't ask for your advice to begin with. I've got a lot of work to do here. For instance, all right, here's a file of a tomato with a great fear of heights.
Why?
He's afraid of being dropped, then squished. Here's another tomato with a fear of enclosed spaces.
Why?
She's afraid of being squashed, then squished. Here's another tomato who's afraid of floors.
Why?
It's afraid of being stepped on, then squished. You see, the word squish is the most horrific word in the tomato language.
I didn't know.
Squished, squished, squashed, and the sound...
Where did you learn how to counsel vegetables?
You don't have to learn, Steve. You just do it.
You don't have any credentials.
What's the matter with you? What, am I going to be arrested for trying to help a vegetable? Even the stupidest human is thousands of times smarter than, let's say, an avocado.
But you're not a human. You're a dummy.
Look, I don't need to talk to you about this. I've got a heavy caseload, and I need to finish my work. Put on a recording so I don't have to talk to you anymore.
Fine. Jeesh.
Jay Unger and Molly Mason came on as guests a while back. And, well, of course, they've been regular guests on the show. But I remember one particular day that he did his chicken song that he wrote. I thought I'd play it for you. I had just asked him if he would do another song for us. And he said, sure. Just like this.
Sure, yeah. That the subject of chickens is near and dear to my heart. See, I'm chicken-hearted.
Yeah, look, yeah, okay.
There's something about fiddles and chickens, you know.
Right. This isn't Chicken in a Pot, is it, the song you wrote?
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it.
You know, on this song, there's a special word for you to say with us, Harry.
Oh, yeah? Well, what?
That's it. He
got
it.
How'd you know?
What?
That's the word. The word is...
What?
That's the word.
What?
Okay, here we go. ¶¶ expansionistic day. Some folks have plenty of bread, but we're just paying through the nose to keep our family fed. I've tried to change my diet, find something cheaper to eat. We're eating lots more chicken now and a whole lot less red meat. Oh, it's chicken,
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 chicken.
Put them in a pot, cook them up most any way. Tell you what you've got.
What?
Chickens in a pot. Next time you see the butcher and he sells you the bird, be sure and take the whole thing. You can use every bit I've heard. You can fry the eggs, gnaw the bones, and eat up all that meat. Stuff a pillow with the feathers and make soup out of the feet. Oh, it's chicken,
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 chicken.
Gotta put them in a pot, cook them up most anyway. Tell you what you got.
What?
Chickens in a pot. That it's a sin. It seems their little lives have just begun before we do them in. Done some calculating, and I'm telling you right now, it takes 523 chickens just to add up to one fat cow. Oh, chickens,
chickens,
gotta put them in a pot, cook them up most anyway. Tell you what you've got.
What?
Chickens in a pot. Curried, baked, and creamed. Cordon bleu to barbecue, I see them in my dreams. Croquettes, cutlets, almonding, paprikash, and fricassee. Oh, it's time to switch to tofu and set your little chickens free. Oh, I said chicken,
chicken,
chicken. Put them in a pot, cook them up most anyway. I'll tell you what you got. Chickens in a pot.
Well, Harry has a new therapy practice. He counsels vegetables. Pickles with guilt complexes. Cauliflowers with inferiority complexes. Tomatoes with a fear of heights. You know, I didn't realize that vegetables have as many neuroses as humans do.
Well, all except attention deficit, Steve. They tend to stay pretty focused.
I suppose. Well, who else is in your caseload?
Let's see. I have a plum here with multiple personalities.
Really?
Sure. Sometimes he acts like a plum. Other times he's a prune. Then suddenly he'll switch and roll around like a big grape. Ha! And you should see him as a large raisin. What a mess!
Well, at least he doesn't think he's a head of lettuce.
Well, that's what you think.
Did you ever deal with, an arugula?
Are you kidding? The arugulas are in the most need of therapy. They are so arrogant. With a name like that, wouldn't you be? Arugula. They don't realize that deep down they're as moronic as the rest of the vegetable family. They think they're so hoity-poity. But I put them in their place.
How?
I get them up in a garden salad. After they hang out with a fluke plebeian tomatoes and radishes, they feel differently.
It gives them a new lease on life?
Well, what's left of their life, I usually eat them first so they don't have much time to enjoy their newfound clarity.
That's cruel. You eat your patients.
How many times do I have to tell you? These are vegetables!
Well, I hope you get paid in advance.
Only cash. Did you ever get a check by a vegetable? It's really hard to read their signature or even how much they're paying you. That's because they don't have hands. It's hard to sign your name without a hand.
What kind of names do vegetables have, anyway?
Who knows? I can never understand them when they tell me.
I don't know. This whole thing is sounding fishier and fishier.
Fish! Ha! Now that's my other practice. Did I ever tell you about this tuna that I counsel as a schizophrenic?
Another time, Harry. Another time.
This podcast is produced, written, and performed by me, Steve Charney. Today's show is written with Kelly Kinion. You can hear this podcast on iTunes and on my YouTube channel, as well as patreon.com/Steve Charney, where you can become a patron of the show for $1 a month. My website is stevecharney.com to access more information about me than you'll ever need or want. And, you know, I blog occasionally, and I also tweet. On Facebook, search for Stephen Harry, Conversations with My Dummy, and thanks for listening.
And if you like this podcast, spread the word around, right?
Yeah, that's right. Spread the word around. Let people know about it.